Welcome to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz, sponsored by Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center. A candid conversation as we learn about dementia, Alzheimer's, and its effects on the people we love. Jill's years of dedication and experience help you adapt, recover, overcome obstacles, and help find a positive outcome. It's time for Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
Well, happy day, everybody. I hope everybody's having a good morning. It's come to my attention that I talked to Hank, my producer and engineer here at the station, and some of the listeners have asked me, do I have an imaginary friend? I do not. Hank, I'm welcoming you to the conversation today.
Hey, thanks. Yeah, I'm not imaginary. I'm a real person.
So we're just going to have a conversation today, you and me and our listeners. And I thought what we needed to really approach today was people who are living with this disease, with the person they love or care deeply about, and they are staying at home. Okay? And I have no criticism of that. Let me just tell you that from the beginning. But it is, it's always an unwelcome surprise when Alzheimer's and memory loss hits your home. And I know that for me, my husband and I are just getting ready to celebrate our 19th anniversary tomorrow.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And,
yeah.
And you are married, so we get it, right? We get that you love somebody deeply. You want to take care of them. You make that till death do us part promise, and you want to do the best you can. And when Alzheimer's comes into your home, it starts really with household issues like cooking food and burning it. Putting utensils back in the wrong place, laundry not being done right or put in the wrong drawers or the wrong place in the house, losing their way when they're traveling from here to there and A to Z and so forth, or making wrong turns, things like that. And, you know, checking account issues come into play where somebody's not balancing the account anymore, spending a little more money, and it scares the family member. Right?
Yeah.
But they say, I love this person. Nobody can take care of them better than me. But hey, let's go to the doctor. Let's get this checked out. Right? So we have the little red flag warnings with the mini mentals and so on and so forth. And I think what families try to do is they say, look, I'll read what I can online. I'll do what I can to help my person that has this disease, but I don't want to involve anybody else. I'm a little afraid for certain reasons, right? And I get that. I want them to be happy. I want them to feel comfortable in their surroundings, but I also want the caregiver to stay healthy, because a lot of times the caregiver stress makes that person go down a little bit faster than their loved one does.
It's a lot of work, isn't it?
It's a ton of work.
Like, there's probably a lot that, you know, goes involved in not only caring for someone you love, but, you know, taking care of them that extra, that extra way.
Absolutely. You know, when the person with the disease starts getting further progressed, they're in the mild cognitive stage, and then they start moving into early stage, they lose their stability. They lose some things around their mobility that keeps them safe. And so this morning, I want to talk about what we can do for those people that just want to take care of their loved one at home. Let's honor that. Let's try to embrace what they're trying to do and see if we can give them a little help.
Yeah, keep them at home.
I think that sounds good. So we know that person that gets the disease and starts living through it, they become someone other than who they've been. And we know that. And it causes some frustration. I want family members right off the top to understand that compassion and looking at what if this were me, you know? If they can look at the situation in the eyes of the person that has the disease, I think the compassion level would be even higher. But sometimes it gets frustrating really early. And so I want the families to ask themselves, what's motivating them and holding them back from asking for help from family members, from friends? Just because your loved one stays at home doesn't mean you can't get a little help along the way. Mm-hmm. You know, do it, share the care, have family members and neighbors and so on and so forth help you. So Dr. Potter said when he was here, he thinks that families get a little embarrassed or maybe still feel the stigma of the disease.
Or maybe a little denial.
a little denial.
You know, and they don't want to come to the fact that their loved one may have this.
Oh, exactly. And the anger. Why? Why my loved one? We haven't done everything we want to do yet. You know? They feel a little robbed. And I think if maybe they could get in a support group. There are 94 of them throughout the state of Colorado. If you're anywhere within the vicinity of a city, there's going to be something
for
you.
And that's for the
caregivers? Anywhere.
Wow.
Yeah. And I've had people tell me that they love listening to the show, but it's so emotional for them that they don't feel like they can call in.
So, it is tough.
So I want to throw something out to them today. Our phone number is 303-631-1430, 303-631-1430. And if you want to call in today and you don't want to be on the air, but you've got a question, if you're afraid you might get emotional or cry, Hank could take your phone number. And I promise I will call you back within 48 hours, okay? I may not be able to get to it this afternoon, but if you want to talk, we'd be happy to take your phone calls today and try to see if we can help you with anything, okay? So one of the things that I think people that live at home, and I don't want this to be controversial, but I do want to be candid, folks don't want to be frustrated, but they create the very thing that they're trying to avoid by trying to do this by themselves. And that's never going to work. That's never going to work. You've got to learn how to work with your loved one. The other issue that they come into is when their loved one stays at home all the time, there will come a time when they start to regress into themselves and not want to go out in the public. And they don't want people to see the disease.
Yeah, kind of hide it almost.
Yeah, they want to hide it. So that's okay. If they want to stay at home, this is what I think they need to do. They have to find a way to engage the person that they love in some kind of activity that is important to them. If it's exercise, if you want to keep them healthy, but they can't go to a gym, that's all right. They can maybe just do lunges. They could grab the back of a chair and lunge down, you know, going forward on each leg, you know, something
even
like
stretching,
that.
You know, even stretching.
Even
stretching,
yeah.
Like a yoga or...
Exactly.
You know, they don't have to have weights involved, do they?
No, not at all. Yeah. Go outside for a walk. Water your plants. It's getting to be spring and summer.
Ooh, yeah. There's you know, a lot of nice plants to...
Absolutely. Get a ball from the store and bounce it back and forth. Okay? Go up and down the stairs if their mobility is still good. There's a lot of different things that they could do from the exercise standpoint, and even cooking, going in and setting the table, cooking, involving themselves in nutrition, and going to the grocery store. Let them push the cart. Don't be afraid to take your loved one out in public. This is a brain disease. We love them. We want to honor them and keep their dignity and their quality of life for as long as we can. So keeping them social will also help to keep them engaged and get their mind working and hopefully hold on to all the things that they need a little bit longer.
Now, are there some activities that might be hard for somebody to do that has Alzheimer's? We talked about some activities that are good. Which ones, are there some that people might want to avoid?
Well, I think anything that has too many steps.
Okay.
When the parietal lobe, the right side of the brain, and actually it goes from ear to ear at a certain point, when that lobe is affected, the number of steps in a task a person can do are severely limited. And when we come back from our commercial break, I'm going to talk about how many steps they can actually do for each stage.
Yeah.
So that gives family members a little bit better handle on what their loved one can still accomplish. And we always want to keep it in the forefront of helping them to do as much as they can for as long as they can to maintain their quality of life. So let's hear a word from our sponsor and we'll be right back.
Making the decision to place your loved one in the care of others is one of the most difficult decisions you will ever have to make. If that someone special is in your life and is needing memory care, Bellevue Heights is the place to call home. Bellevue Heights, part of the JEA Senior Living family, is deeply committed to serving people living with Alzheimer's and other related dementias. Living with purpose and meaning is the best reward at Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center. Your loved one will live life to its fullest. Licensed nurses on staff 24 hours a day, compassionate caregivers, 3 well-balanced meals, and Three healthy snacks are a few key elements of the JEA difference. We also offer fully furnished private and semi-private rooms, meaningful activities, and scheduled outings. Call Bellevue Heights at 303-690-0700 to learn more about the high standard of individualized care they can offer your loved one. Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center is located at 14500 East Bellevue Avenue in Aurora. Visit jeaseniorliving.com or call 303-690-0700 to schedule a tour. Come home to family. Come home to Bellevue Heights.
Welcome to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz, sponsored by Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center. A candid conversation as we learn about dementia, Alzheimer's, and its effects on the people we love. Jill's years of dedication and experience help you adapt, recover, overcome obstacles, and help find a positive outcome. It's time for Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
Okay, so picking up where we left off. I think when people start getting in the early stages, that's where we have a tendency to start talking around them, not talking to them. You know, when we have a conversation, look that person dead in the eye and say, how do you feel about this? Are you feeling okay today? You know, don't act like their memory loss is something that everybody has to hide. Just talk to them. You'll find that it's the communication is a lot easier and makes them feel safe. That's really, really important. Back to doing chores and things like that and the number of steps and a task they can do. When you go and get dressed in the morning, take a shower and all that, that takes about 80 to 100 steps. Just to know you're thirsty and get up from your family room and go in the kitchen and get a drink takes about 25 steps. It might surprise our listeners to know that a person in the early stage can only handle about 25 to 40 steps in any task. And they start losing the ability to learn something new, okay? So even though that's a learned behavior to get up and get something to drink or get dressed, the number of steps start diminishing, and it hurts their situation in being able to work this out. So also, another thing that becomes an issue is when they get to about the mid-stage, they can only handle about 15 to 20 steps. Okay, 15 to 20 steps. So getting up and going and getting something to drink may not be in their cards anymore.
Too many steps.
It's why they leave the cabinets open. It's why they put a bunch of clothes out on their bed and don't finish getting dressed. And they'll be standing in the room when you said, I asked you to go in and get dressed, Mom. What happened? Okay. Mm-hmm. By the time they get to late mid-stage, they're around 10 to 15 steps. And by the time they get in late stage, where they're probably looking at a care community or something like that, they're at about 3 to 5 steps.
Wow.
So if people understand that, and just for a minute, count the steps on the activities that you do and understand how many there are, and then understand what your loved one is going through. I think that's really, really important. And you have to take extra time for dressing, for eating, for shopping. Just add a little 15 minutes, 20 minutes extra to help that person be successful when you go out and do a task. Okay, does that make sense? And one of the other things that is really, really important is don't correct the person if they do something wrong. If they didn't have cognitive impairment, they wouldn't make the mistake in the first place. We have this need to be right. We just do. We have this need to be right. Oh, you didn't say that right. You didn't do that right. Let's give them a break and just look at what they did and applaud them for their effort. You know, if they can get a task done or get it started, then help them finish it. Don't criticize if they didn't do it quite well. Okay? So I want to talk to the family members at home about what do the actions mean when a person's angry at you, or they're angry at the world, they just had this diagnosis, and they seem to be feeding off of negative energy. Try asking yes or no questions and turn it in a way that they don't see you as the enemy. So I would say, Hank, do you know that I really feel bad that you're having trouble with your memory? Okay. Do you understand that I want to do everything I can to help you? Those are yes or no questions, but they create that empathy, okay? Mm-hmm. So I don't think your loved one's ever going to look at you and say, no, I don't think you mean well by that. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So,
yeah.
So just saying, you know, Mama, my heart really aches for you. Do you understand that? If I could take this away from you, if I could have this disease, I would. Do you understand that? Just having that empathy with someone, somewhere along the line in our frustration of this disease, we sort of forget to talk to people that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
It's helpful for the caregiver, too.
Oh, absolutely.
To have those conversations.
It just calms that tension down. It lowers those triggers. It helps people to feel understood and connected and not judged. Right?
Yeah.
I think that makes a big difference. Make sure that they're not watching confrontational TV shows. Turn off those, political things that are going on right now, or any shows that are reality based that seem to have a lot of negative energy, because people with this disease have a tendency to feed off of the emotions of what mm-hmm. they're looking
those
at.
Those TV dramas.
Yeah. So if you think that they're maybe coming with some anxiety and pent up anger, that could be why. Look at the surroundings in the house and see what's going on.
Yeah.
Okay. If you take your loved one out to a restaurant for lunch or dinner, help them with choices for the menu, okay? Instead of handing them a menu and saying, what do you want, which is a closed-ended question, say, you know, Mom, you always like hamburgers. They have a hamburger on the menu. Would you like that today?
You've always liked meatloaf.
Absolutely. And if you make dinner for them and then they look at it and they say, what is this? Is this poison or something like that? They don't mean to say that. Maybe it didn't taste right. A person with this disease will get a very bland palate, and something they think that they wanted might not taste like what they thought it tasted like. And then they ask you, you know, what is this? What did you make for me? I don't like this. But if they turn around and walk away from the table and then they turn back around and they say, when's dinner? Just say, whenever you're ready.
Yeah.
Okay. So work with the disease. Don't fight it. Try to make it as easy as you possibly can. I think some of the home safety things we could think about are locking up your cleaning chemicals, your bleaches, your pods. They might think the bleach is milk or some kind of a drink in a jug. They might think that the pod that you get, you know, like Tide and that kind of stuff, they might think that's candy. Remove clutter and clear pathways in your home. Slippery rugs, remove them. Make sure your loved one has non-skid footwear. All these things will help you to be a little bit more successful. Add handles and grab bars to your bathroom. If you've got a bathroom seat bench in there, make sure that you have a colored towel over the seat, and maybe make sure it's not black or blue or something like that. People with the disease have a tendency to think that something is black as a whole, okay? Put tape, like that paint tape, on the side of the tub so they can see it better. If they're talking to themselves in a mirror, don't get freaked out about that. The person they're seeing doesn't look like the person they used to know. So maybe just put a colored towel over the mirror. That'll easily solve that. I hate to use this term, but childproof handles and doors.
Yeah.
Places you don't want them to go, like downstairs or down in a dark area. I hear a lot of people say that they have issues with the stove burning things. Well, I believe you can remove those handles on the stove.
Oh, yeah, just take those little knobs off.
Just take them off.
Yeah.
That way you don't have to have a fire in your house. The person doesn't really realize it, and then you're safe all the way around. And be sure to remove any knives or weapons in the home. Lock them up. Make sure that if that person gets scared by any shadows, creaks in the house or something like that, or maybe not even recognizing you at a certain point, that you don't have any danger in your path.
Yeah.
You know?
Make sure everyone's safe.
Yeah. I know I just kind of gave a whole lot of information there, but remember, you can always go on and listen to these podcasts and write these things down on the 1430 website, Cruising 1430 AM, or you can go to summitresiliencetraining.com and look at my website. I have people tell me all the time that they may not have computers at home. So if you want to write to me or write to the station, you can certainly do that. And I would be happy to send you information from these podcasts so that you're able to have all the information everybody else has. Let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Making the decision to place your loved one in the care of others is one of the most difficult decisions you'll ever have to make. If that someone special is in your life and is needing memory care, Bellevue Heights is the place to call home. Bellevue Heights, part of the JEA Senior Living family, is deeply committed to serving people living with Alzheimer's and other related dementias. Bellevue Heights believes that supporting families and caregivers is just as important as caring for our residents. We offer free monthly support groups, education and lecture series, and presentations by experts in Alzheimer's and dementia care. All of our programs are free and open to the public. Call Bellevue Heights at 303-690-0700 to learn more about the high standard of individualized care they can offer your loved one. And ask about our current and upcoming education opportunities and support groups. Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center is located at 14500 East Bellevue Avenue in Aurora. Visit jeaseniorliving.com or call 303-690-0700 to schedule a tour. Come home to family. Come home to Bellevue Heights.
Welcome to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz, sponsored by Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center. A candid conversation as we learn about dementia, Alzheimer's, and its effects on the people we love. Jill's years of dedication and experience help you adapt, recover, overcome obstacles, and help find a positive outcome. It's time for Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
Okay, so I went back over all my years of training and the people I've met with the disease, Hank.
Yeah.
And I came up with my top 10 list of things people with Alzheimer's don't want you to say to them.
All right. I wish I had a drum roll ready.
I'm doing my best David Letterman, right?
Top 10 okay. list. Here we go.
So number 10, what do you want for lunch? Yeah. Try asking yes or no questions. Maybe give one or two choices. Open-ended questions mm-hmm. are very difficult for people with this disease. So don't ask them what they want for lunch.
That's a hard question for
me
a lot, too.
It's a very hard question.
Now,
I want to be helpful. I don't want to be sarcastic or anything. But one of them I thought was really funny. A lady said, what I don't like is when somebody says, so what have you been doing lately? She said, I want to say, skydiving in Egypt.
Yeah.
But just remember, like I said, open-ended questions set the person with dementia up for failure. Okay. Ask them something like, did you have a good day? Did you have a nice walk?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those yes or no
answers. Yes or no.
Yeah.
Yeah. Number 8, use your words. Well, people with dementia are not children. They are not 3-year-olds. They're not refusing to use their words. They can't find the words. So if you know what they're trying to say or you can guess, then meet them halfway and try to help them understand that you want to help them finish their thought.
Mm-hmm.
You're not being critical or mean with them. Okay? I think that's really important. Number 7. No, I'm not Marie. At a certain point, they can't recognize people, okay? If you've got a lot of people in a group for like a holiday setting or something, think about wearing name tags.
That's right? A good idea.
Yeah, they're not trying to not know who you are. They really don't recognize you. And chances are, if they think you're Marie, they might miss Marie. Marie might be somebody that they knew or loved. Tell them who you are and ask them to tell you more about that person that they're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Just can you tell me more? That's a yes or no question, but it's a great way to see if they can try to find what they were searching for originally. Right? Number 6. That's not what happened. Okay. I met a lady one time who said she keeps telling her sister who has Alzheimer's, no, that story's not correct. That's not what happened. And she said her sister always shuts down. Well, the reason for that is a person with dementia will think that they're not allowed to talk now because they can't get the story right. They can't get the facts straight. So
what they don't want to talk about it anymore.
Yeah. And what would it hurt to let them be right? Is the world going to change? Is the sky going to fall because the information wasn't correct?
Nothing's going to fall apart.
Right.
So, if anything, you're helping the situation.
Yeah. So just go with the flow. If they're in 1942, go there. Might be a cool journey.
Yeah.
Right?
I'd like to hear about the story.
Right? All right. Number five. Oh, actually, so-and-so, Fred, Frank, whoever, passed away. We don't want to relive a tidal wave of grief that serves no benefit, right? So if they've forgotten that somebody has passed away, they miss that person. So just say they're not available right now.
They're at the store.
You'll see them later. Maybe you will, maybe you won't. People have issues over therapeutical fibs, but I like them, you know. They just probably don't feel safe. They're not feeling content. So just ask more about that person. Pull out a photo album. You know, let them look at pictures of that person and just talk to them about the love they had for that person. Their emotions stay longer than their memory does. So let's go with that. Let's make them feel comfortable and safe. Right?
Now, you mentioned pictures. Mm-hmm. Now, would music do the same?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, turn on some tunes from when they were growing up?
Absolutely, yeah. So just something that brings back that memory of that person. I think that would be super cool. All right, number four. I know you probably don't remember, but... So that is a confirming statement that the person with dementia has a failing memory.
Starts out negative.
Yeah, they already know that. Just make the statement again as though you never said it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what does it hurt? Just say it again. And try to remember that compassion is the key here, right? If they could remember, they wouldn't have this disease. And we want to make sure we always keep their dignity in the forefront. What if it were you and you couldn't remember? Let's treat people how we want to be treated. Number three. Do you remember me? What's my name? I that one kind of bugs me because the person with dementia is not intentionally forgetting your name. And if you say your name in a sentence, you know, like, oh, Jim said to me, Jill, are you going to watch the Blackhawks game today after your show is over? That might help the person I'm talking to remember my name. So put your name in a sentence or cue them somehow to who you are.
Hey, it's me, Hank.
Yeah. This is easy stuff, but people just forget to do it. This is my pet peeve in life. Number two, you just wet your diaper. Oh, please, people, please don't do that. Saying the word diaper is degrading and it's insensitive. Call it an adult protective garment or depends. Use routines at home with your loved one and remind them to use the restroom, you know, 10 or 20 minutes after they've had a big meal or something to drink.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Number one, drum roll. You said that already. You just asked me that. The number one thing people with dementia do not want you to say to them. So my client who told me this said, you know how the disease works, right? All right. That's the only smart aleck thing I say. But I thought that was pretty funny that she said that, right?
Yeah.
So just answer the question again and try to redirect them to a place where they're looking at something else. Okay. If they had a good memory, they wouldn't have Alzheimer's.
Exactly.
It's a brain disease, and we want to make sure we're always conscious of how we work with our loved one.
Sounds like patience.
Yeah,
big
patience.
Part of it too.
And here's the biggie. No, you are not a failure if you need help. You are not a failure. Every family faces tough decisions with this disease. At some point, skilled care might be required. You might need home visits by medical personnel. Using the toilet, feeding and bathing may become hard. Your own health may be affected. But just remember, you love that person. You're doing everything you possibly can. You've done your best. And if you're up for it, call me email me, write me a letter, and you can send it right here to the station. Use a phone book and look it up if you don't have a computer. Maybe take a class. I have a class that is an 8-hour class for family caregivers.
Sounds great.
That could help you. So we're here for you. We care about you. Tried to have a couple of good ideas for you today. And believe me, I'm not criticizing anybody. We kept my mom at home for a long, long time. I know families are doing their best out there. We want to thank Bellevue Heights, who is actually going to be my next guest. Nikki Giewertz from Bellevue Heights is going to come on and talk about what you need to look for when you decide to ask for that additional help for a care community.
Sounds great.
Yeah. And I was told that people don't have the address. So in our quest for Dr. Potter, I will also have this posted, if I can, on the website here so that you can get information about his address, and we'll try to raise some money for him. So everybody have a happy Sunday.
Yeah.
Take care.
Let's have some fun.
See you next week.